Well, I'm happy to answer any questions about Kshanti or anything else if you have anything you'd like to ask. I've got a few minutes left. And I'll be patient. Well, I think it's just that, you know, you have to go deeper with people. And I think what you've got in common in a sense is that you're trying to practice the Dharma with people together. And you may feel that you haven't actually got much in common with people, perhaps people you meet on retreat or so on. But you need to give it time, I think. And sometimes what I've found myself is it's the people that I found it difficult, where I've had to work at developing a friendship. You know, I've had to look deeper at my own resources, and they've actually ended up being the best friendships. You know, whereas the ones that have come quite easy, and we both like jazz, you know, and we both like going to art galleries and so on, that's more superficial, that's more surface, and perhaps, you know, I can get along like that for quite a while. But I think it's with people that, you know, I might even feel a bit of aversion for at first when I first meet them, or that communication doesn't flow that easily, that sometimes you've ended up with the most, you know, the deepest friendships. And I think the other thing is that there are different forms of friendship, you know, and some friendships are where you're very intimate with people. But there are other friendships where they just develop just through being around somebody over years and years. And you may not even have very intimate conversations, but you meditate together, you go on retreat together, and something builds up, you know, over time. So it's not like a love affair. You know, friendship's not like a love affair. It's something that's develops much more slowly, and it doesn't have the same intensity as a love affair, but in a sense, it can go very, very deep, you know, whereas a love affair can happen very quickly and it can be over very quickly as well. And you have these very intense feelings, whereas friendship's just something that's much more slow burning and it needs time, you know, so you give it time. So again, you need Kshanti in friendship, you know, you need patience. Yeah.
En vändpunkt att börja låta människor praktisera dharma som de själva ville så här.
Yeah.
Och jag undrar om du kan säga någonting om hur du har balanserat det med att stå upp för dharma som du förstår.
Yeah.
Att man kan tänka att det kan finnas en spänning där mellan att
Yeah. Well, I think what I've learned is you can't impose your views on other people, you know, and you know, you can't, people have to be free to choose. So if people don't feel free to choose, then they can't really involve themselves, you know, and it's only when people feel free to choose and they can come and go and they can approach things at their own time in their own way that they, you know, that they can actually involve themselves more wholeheartedly. If people can't say no, they can't say yes. Yeah. I think there is. You know, I think sometimes you do, you know, I mean, I think sometimes there is a need to actually cut off with somebody, you know, if they're trying to harm you or something like that, you know, or whatever. Or maybe you need to have space from people sometimes. But I think the thing to do is not to give up too easily on people. You know, I think sometimes you know, as soon as we have some sort of argument with somebody, we're very quick to withdraw. And I think sometimes we can go back and we can talk to them, and we can find a way through that. But I think there is a boundary. You know, there is a limit. Yeah. I think the obvious example for me is Bhante. You know, my teacher, you know, that he's just incredibly patient with us. You know, and I think he's, you know, he's been the teacher of our movement since about 1960, you know, and 1965. And he has this incredible correspondence, you know, and people don't always treat him well. You know, sometimes people react to him, they see him as an authority, all sorts of things go on. But I do feel that he's very, very patient, you know, and he's put up with a lot of people's immaturity and so on. But he's always kept the connections open. So I think he's an example for me. I'm sure there are others as well.
Bodhisattvas närvaro, eller alltså,
yeah.
Det skulle kunna utveckla, alltså, ta lite mer
I mean, I think it's a very mysterious thing, you know, because I think when we start out practicing the Dharma, we think very much in terms of our own efforts, you know, making effort in meditation and so on, you know, and striving ourselves. But as we go on, we start to realize that there's something coming back, you know, that there's, and I don't, it's not God, you know, but it's very, very difficult to put it into words. But there is something, there are forces of love and compassion and so on in the universe. And in a sense, one's trying to align oneself with those forces so that they can affect us. And so we're trying to bring our own behavior, we're trying to make our own behavior more compassionate and more aware. And then it feels as if something almost comes in from the outside, as if we get some help with that from outside. So in Japanese Buddhism, they talk about self-power and other power. You know, and in the early stages of spiritual life, you practice self-power, but then you open up to the forces of wisdom and compassion in the universe. And that's very much what we do as order members, doing visualization practice. So at the time of our ordination, we take up a visualization practice of a Buddha or a Bodhisattva. And we visualize them, and we recite the mantra. And something happens, and the qualities start to rub off on us. They start to affect us. So you can see the Buddha and Bodhisattva figures as a symbolic representation of the qualities of enlightenment. But it's a very mysterious thing, and I couldn't argue it. You know, in empirical terms, I couldn't prove it. Yeah. I hope that's helpful. There's a lot more that could be said. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Mickey. I suppose so, but I tend to think that if you familiarize yourself with something, it starts to lose its fear. You know, it's when we resist it and we push it away that it becomes more frightening. And I tend to think that a lot of our fear of death is to do with that we identify so strongly with the physical body, and that we tend to think that when the physical body goes, that's an end. But I think through meditation, you begin to get a sense that you begin to identify more with the mind, you know, and begin to realize that as you begin to let go, you also let go of things being a particular way. And I think as you gradually let go more and more in meditation, you begin to let go of that attachment to a physical body. So in a sense, it ceases to be something so final. That's I'm afraid about the best I can do. Yeah. So I think it's our attachment that makes death so frightening, but I'm not so sure that death in itself is frightening, if you see what I mean. I think what happens is you know, if you get irritated, later you reflect on it, you see, okay, I lost my temper. That brings more awareness into that. Yeah? And then the next time maybe you catch it a bit earlier. You know, until eventually, as you bring more awareness to it and with the help of meditation, you catch it as you're starting to get irritated and before you open your mouth and say something. Yeah. Okay, we'd better stop there. So good.